Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch, flying solo here in the studio on this Monday, August 21st, 2017. But don't worry, you will get your weekly dose of Mike Brennan here starting in just a moment. We've got a great show for you today. We've got the provost of Lawrence Technological University, my employer. Where's that bell? Where's the shameless plug bell? Okay. Oh, well.
Someone broke the bell. There's another one over there.
And we've got Dave on the board today. And then we've also got this Kathleen Norton-Schock, our regular visitor, and Catherine Phillips from the LTU Library. But she'll be speaking about the Inventors Society. So a little something for the entrepreneurial crowd among us to close out the show today. But first, we've got calling in from the Netherlands, our very own Mike Brennan. Mike, how's it going?
Guten Abend from Netherlands.
Okay. Suddenly I'm transported to Grand Rapids. Okay. Very cool.
That's where I picked up all my Dutch lingo from over there. Yeah. I know some dirty words, but I won't share them with.
Okay. So. Yeah, we do try to keep this safe for work.
So be honest, you're calling in from a coffee shop, aren't you?
Or some other kind of shop, maybe in the Netherlands.
I'm not. I'm actually at my friend's house right now. So okay. That was yesterday. So, moving right along.
Right.
All right. Well, it was something of a busman's holiday for you, though, Mike, because you were while you were there, you actually committed a little bit of journalism, and I wanted to talk to you about that to start things off here. You met with someone with the Dutch government talking about how they're responding to rising sea levels, right?
Yeah, this morning I did. I went to The Hague, which is where the government center is, so 15 minutes or so train ride from where I am. I'm near Leiden. And so I went down there and did a video interview with a man named Henk Ovink. And he is, he's not a minister, but he's like the special representative that goes around the world helping folks deal with the rising seawater, climate change, that sort of thing. In fact, I found out that President Obama had him on the team when Hurricane Sandy hit New York. He came up there, kind of showed them things they could do in the future, because, of course, this is going to probably happen again, how they could lessen the impact. And he said they've made great progress, actually, in New York. But, of course, here in the Netherlands, where there's some points in the Netherlands that are 20 feet below sea level, and they reclaimed all this land hundreds of years ago. They have tremendous expertise in how to deal with rising seawater, which most people think is a result of climate change. And so a lot of people are beating a path to the Netherlands right now to figure out how to deal with this, because it's not going to get any better, right?
Right, probably not. So how are they dealing with it? What can you do except build higher walls?
Well, that's actually not how they do it. They have something called Room for the River program, and so they put in natural floodplains in different places because they know that the rivers are going to rise, either because of rain or storms or whatever the case might be. And so instead of trying to build higher and higher dikes or walls, they let the river flow naturally into areas where they can, have the green areas where they can. It gets absorbed by the earth and it lessens the impact. But they also have a lot of other things. They have this gigantic sea gate that they have built outside of Rotterdam, which is the major port here in Europe, huge port. And they have, according to them, and I'm going to go take a look at that later in the week, they have the gate itself is like lying two Eiffel Towers down from either side. And it's, that long, that thick, but of course much heavier. And so if there's a very nasty storm coming in, they can shut the gate, keeps flooding from happening here in the lowlands. And if not, then they let the water flow out to the sea. But again, they use a lot of natural sort of green stuff. I mean, you guys at Lawrence Tech are doing some of that same stuff with, your parking lot where you have the natural runoff and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. They do it here to a much higher degree and have been doing it for a much longer period of time. But they had their big, come to Jesus moment in the 1990s. When they had a couple of major floods that killed a lot of people, And after that, that was kind of their Hurricane Sandy incident. And so then they woke up and discovered that, well, they have to, you know, they were doing really good to a point, but they had to get a whole lot better, again, because most of this, it's like Florida. Florida's above sea level, but here a lot of it is below sea level, and so they have to do a very innovative thing. So they have a variety of things. I mean, certainly they have the dikes and the walls, and but they have lots of different ways to keep everything under control.
Well, what's the extent of the tide there? Because it's ocean and not lake, you are obviously dealing with some tidal forces there as well. Like, how much higher is high tide than low tide where they are?
You know, I did the canal tour yesterday, and I've been looking around. It's a meter or two higher at high tide than low tide.
Okay.
But Amsterdam and all through the Netherlands, I mean, they've been doing this for almost 1,000 years.
Sure.
So Amsterdam's been there at least 1,000 years. And so the canals actually do dissipate a lot of that water. That's the reason the canals are there, because then they can control that the flow, and they can control the depth of the water through those canals. And Amsterdam has like 6 or 7 layers of canals. Seems like when we went down to the city, we're forever crossing a canal or going over a bridge. But it's a you know, quite a city, and there was a lot of people here. There has been a lot of people here because this is the end of the vacation season in Europe.
Okay. So what else have you been doing there? What's there to do in Amsterdam? The touristy stuff that you've been doing.
Well, we've been doing, it's also, you know, a working vacation, and my daughter's here with my future son-in-law, so I've been had a chance to spend some time with them. So we've been doing some touristy kinds of stuff, you know, going into downtown. We went to the wax museum, and we've done a lot of bar hopping. As David said, we've visited. They have these strange cafes here with some sort of incense I'm not familiar with. So it's a pretty interesting town. We were walking through two nights ago to go over to the Hard Rock Cafe for they had this dinner cruise thing. And my future son-in-law is a big Hard Rock Cafe fan. And as we were walking over there, they had taken one of the canals and put a big bandstand out in the middle of it and sealed off the block on either end, and they were having an open-air concert. And it's a real happening city. Lots of stuff going on here. And it's a pretty good-sized city, 800,000 or 900,000 people, and there's got to be a couple hundred thousand tourists here right now. We went down into the main square, and I'll bet there was every bit of 10 or 15,000 people in that square. So, but it's really, like I say, you get down closer and closer to the downtown area. Streets get narrower, the buildings get taller, and the congestion gets worse. So, but it's fun. And then what I'm going to do for the rest of the week now is just sort of tour around the Netherlands, look at things. I'm going to go out and check out that big floodgate near Rotterdam, and then we're going to do some fun things, you know, bicycling and whatnot, and I'll be back next week.
All right. So in terms of what they're doing to combat the rising sea levels there, you were saying that there's levels of canals. Tell me how that works.
Well, they have concentric canals that come out from, I'm trying to think, it's kind of like almost like how the streets in Detroit radiate out from the Detroit River. And it's the same sort of setup, except it's all water and all canals. And they can let water in, they can let water out. It's sort of the natural flow of the tides moving in and out, whatever, if it's a rainstorm or something or a heavy storm, they sort of use those canals in to control the water levels and get it out of the city. But again, they use lots of other things. They have the greenlands and the wetlands where they have the natural floodplains that they've set up. And then, of course, they do have the seawalls and things like that. So they use a variety of different techniques, and that's what they're telling the rest of the world. I mean, it really depends on, you know, how low you are, what the geological conditions are. But they have lots of different ways to help the rest of the world figure out how to deal with this issue of rising sea levels.
Yeah. Sounds like they could be talking to the folks in Louisiana, perhaps, about New Orleans.
Absolutely, yeah, because that's one of the things they mentioned. The Rotterdam area is on a delta, and when I was interviewing Hank today, he was talking about all these other deltas around the world. One of them he mentioned was New Orleans, that they, you know, they can, and I'm not sure if they are currently providing any advice there, but certainly in the New York area, they are providing advice. I'm told delegations come in here almost on a weekly basis from around the world to talk to these civil engineering companies, talk to the Dutch government, talk to Hank, who is sort of the head cheerleader for the whole program. Nice fella. The Dutch have all that expertise, and the world is coming to their door.
Yeah, it sounds like New Orleans might be actually more applicable or more analogous to Rotterdam than New York is, because I know one of the translations I read someplace for Manhattan is hilly place, which means New York City is actually quite hilly, and it gets up above sea level pretty quickly once you get a couple of blocks, you know, in from the coast. You look at those maps of the 1 meter and where you can, you know, flood the world if you want to. You can make sea level rise and you know, look at a map of what would get inundated, and really not a whole lot of New York would get inundated other than like the Battery Park area, right down at the bottom of the island. But New Orleans, that's a different story. Talk about a city, a lot of which is below sea level, and that relies on pretty active management measures to avoid flooding.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the things he mentioned, that they are below sea level there. So a lot of the mitigation techniques that they're using here in the Netherlands could work quite well there. Again, I don't know if there's any conversations going on, but if anybody from New Orleans is listening, I would encourage them to do so.
So what possessed you to go over there in the first place? Just for fun, or is this you had a friend over there you wanted to see? What was the cause of the trip?
Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody I've known for 40 years. Married a Dutch woman. He retired a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago. He was a teacher at the American School in The Hague. And when I was in Paris last summer visiting my daughter, I briefly came up here for a quick visit, one of those, you know, overnight quick turnarounds. And he invited me to come back after he retired, and so we could hang out for a couple of weeks and actually take a vacation, which is unusual. You know me, I don't take many vacations and take much time off. So it's actually very relaxing, and I'll get my batteries recharged and be ready to go in the fall here when all these other new things are starting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the only time I've known you to take vacation is when everything else is closed anyway, usually. It's between Christmas and New Year's. That's about the only time.
Yeah. Well, that's why I picked this time, because everybody's on vacation in Michigan. I mean, they're all getting their last-minute vacations in before the kids go back to school.
Yep.
So I figured out, what the hell, you know, I might as well take some time off myself. Because, you know, you gotta step back every now and then and get some perspective, especially when we got as many things going on as we do.
Okay. So when will you be back?
Next Tuesday, the 29th.
Okay. This is as good a time to announce this as any, I guess, that we are going to be taking the next 2 weeks off here on the TechCast. So we will be back with you on Monday, September 11th. But this is our last one until then, right?
Yeah, we're both taking off next Monday, and then the following Monday is Labor Day, which, of course, we always take off when there's a Monday holiday. So, yeah, September 11th, we will be back at it again as a tag team.
Okay. All right. Sounds good, Mike. We're going to let it leave it there. Safe travels coming back, and we hope to see you back here on September 11th.
Sounds great, Matt. Have a good show.
All right. Thanks very much. Mike Brennan, everybody. He is a proprietor of Michigan Technology News. That's mitechnews.com, and has been since 1999. Anybody who can stay in business that long is aces in my book, and my co-host here on the M-Squared TechCast. We'll be right back in a moment with the rest of our program for today. For right now, this is Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast. Hey, it's Matt Rausch, and we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. With us now is Maria Vaz. She is provost and chief academic officer at my employer, Lawrence Technological University. That's the shameless plug bell that we play here when we plug our employers or other things that we're interested in. Maria, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Matt.
All right. Well, you wanted to talk about some things today. For one thing, at Lawrence Tech, it is the first day of the school year, so the fall semester started today. And we also had quite the eclipse watching party on campus today, right? I mean, there were more than 1,000 people out there.
There were a lot of people. You made it. We made sure that we start our first day of classes during the solar eclipse, so the students are all happy, you know, getting together. Actually, the freshmen have an opportunity to meet each other in a different environment. So yes, it's always a good day when it's the first day of school.
Oh yeah, there seems to be a lot of promise in the air, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
a lot of possibilities.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
So Dr. Scott Carpenter sort of coordinated. He's a physics professor at Lawrence Tech, and he coordinated our eclipse viewing party. He had, I think, 3 solar telescopes that I saw out there, a whole bunch of the eclipse viewing glasses, and a whole bunch of people showed up with pinhole cameras and more viewing glasses. So everybody who wanted to get a good look at it got a good look at it. It was pretty impressive.
There was a big party, no doubt. Even my husband came down just to check it out.
Well, he is also a physicist,
yes,
right?
Yes, he is a physicist too, like me.
Okay. So I wanted to talk to you about a couple of new programs at Lawrence Tech. First of all, we have added a nursing program, a nursing major at Lawrence Tech. We'll talk about that for just a bit.
Yes. Okay. So we decided to add a nursing program because being part of Lawrence Tech and being the way nursing is today, such an important part of healthcare, the way nurses work today, of course, in addition to the acute care and to be close to the patients, they really are the managers of patient's care and in the majority of the cases, really healthcare in so many different ways. And in addition to that, they use a lot of technology, from surgeries to actually every day having to work with all the sensors that look into what is the situation of the patients. So it's something that makes a lot of sense for Lawrence Tech, looking for the nursing of the future, of the 21st century, that is a lot more than the person that is next to the patient, making sure that the patient is well taken care of.
And also nursing is moving more toward, it used to be that you could become a licensed practical nurse in a 1-year program and get a registered nurse in a 2-year program. But more and more healthcare facilities are requiring a bachelor's in nursing now, right?
Actually, there was a report that came out in 2012 that was part of the Association of Nursing that asked for 80% of the nurses to have a bachelor's degree, just because they are requiring a lot more of the nurses than what used to be. At this moment, 40% of the nurses have a bachelor's degree. So, again, make a lot of sense for us to get into, that particular area of healthcare. And hopefully we will start with nursing and we will continue to move into other areas.
So tell me a little bit about the program. I know a lot of nursing programs are 5-year programs for bachelors. How does Lawrence Tech's bachelor's program
work? So our program is a bachelor's of science program. Is going to be offered for 3 semesters, the first regular semesters in the summer. So it's a continuous program. And that way we will be able to graduate nurses in 4 years. So that is one of the things that are special about our program. The other thing that is even more special is the fact that many programs, students start in a general program and then only during the junior year they are admitted into the nursing program. Our program starts in the freshman year, and that is actually one of the things that is across the board part of Lawrence Tech. All our students, doesn't matter what is the major, they will start working on their major in the freshman year. So the nurses, there will be specially nursing courses at the freshman year. We want to make sure that these men and women that chose this profession don't waste time. And if they decide that that is not what they want to do, they can find something else instead of only understanding that they don't like it when they are juniors. So
it does seem like an awful lot of time to invest to figure out you don't like it.
And right? and if they like it, they are excited about from the start to be able to do what they like.
Mm-hmm. All right, and talk about our partner in the nursing program as well.
So our partner, we were very fortunate in finding and working together with the St. John Providence system. Mm-hmm. They together worked with us in defining and developing the program. They are going, all our students are going to do their clinicals in their system. So they have 7 hospitals throughout the Metro Detroit area. And so our student nurses will be able to work together, you know, doing their clinicals in these 7 hospitals.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a chance to brag a little bit about our director of nursing also, Therese Jameson.
Yes, Matt, you met her. So she's a force to reckon with.
Absolutely.
Is a person. So Dr. Therese Jameson, she is a very enthusiastic. She really, you know, frankly, we started today was the first class that we had. And we had worked with the state of Michigan to have 32 students, and we have 32 students in our first class. So she worked very hard.
Good.
We had a couple I would like to bring out of the 32 students. We have 8 or 9 that are men.
Mm-hmm.
So this is always nice. You know, at Lawrence Tech, we are so used to have more men and a few women, but it's nice to have a program where we actually have the opposite. And I think it's 3 or 4 of the men are actually football players.
Okay.
So it's a great start for us.
So they're going to be able to get people in and out of beds without any trouble at all.
Of course. That's actually, I had not thought about it, but it's good.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of lifting required
yes,
in nursing.
Exactly.
I've got some relatives who are nurses, and they all tend to have bad backs by the time they're
about
50.
That's very true.
Any other new programs you'd care to mention, graduate or certificate programs that we added this year?
We started this year a graduate program that is quite interesting. Is in our Department of Art and Design, and is a master's program in social practice. And actually what that means, you know, in lay terms, is a master's program for artists that like to do street art. And so it's very community oriented. We have a couple of professors that are very well known for their street art events, if you want. That's a lot more than just a piece of art. It's really an event.
Mm-hmm.
And with all what is going on in Detroit and the interest that there is in Detroit in terms of design and in terms of new artists, we decided that this would be a great program to have. So we are excited about the program. It's, again, something that people would not see Lawrence Tech involved in art. But, you know, when we do art in a different way.
Yeah. Okay. So anyone who looks at our campus these days will see that there's some construction going on.
Yes.
We are building another residence hall. Talk about that for a moment,
right,
if you would, please.
So this is going to be our 4th residence hall. Probably 10 years ago or 15 years ago, we decided that was important for us to become more residential. One of the what research shows that the campus where students reside, in general, they have a better retention rate. So that means that the students end up being more successful. They mm-hmm. start and they finish quicker. And so we started that process. And also allows for students to, you know, for us to have a campus that is more, has a lot of more activities, right, in terms of student life.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that students learn actually more outside of the classroom than inside of the classroom. So if we can provide them 24 hours of learning environment, it's great for us. And that is what we are trying to do, mm-hmm. is to actually, through different ways and different activities, to provide an environment that is 24/7.
Okay. And when will that residence hall be done?
It will be done for the fall of 2018. So okay. I want to tell you that at this moment, we already have a waiting list for our, we are completely full with our dorms. Hmm. We have now 820 students in that live on campus. With this new dorm, we will have more than 1,000 students. And we know that, you know, it will be filled as soon as we finish it.
Yeah, that is one of the things I've heard from our Dean of Students, Kevin Finn. He says, if you let me build more dorms, I will fill them up.
Right. It's very true. You know, students are looking for this kind of, you know, way of being in college. I know that when we started online programs, people always asked about what is going to be the future of campuses, and the students continue to want to come and live on campus.
Well, the other thing that I wanted you to mention just briefly here is the fact that we are adding football as an intercollegiate sport for the first coming back to football, I should say, for the first time in 70 years.
Right. I like to tell you coming back to football because I think it's important that people understand that we really had a very viable and a really exciting and dynamic athletic program, and we are just coming back to our roots again. Mm-hmm. And so we had football before, and so we have been so successful with being able to recruit athletes that are actually extremely good students. Just on a side, you know, when we started thinking about it, our faculty members were all nervous about the kind of students that we'll have if we had athletes. And today, every single faculty member at Lawrence Tech is delighted because the athletes are the best students, are the most disciplined, are the ones that do things on time. And so this creates really a great leadership for them. So this is a way of them actually developing their leadership skills.
Right. And from what I am told, the athletes have a higher average GPA than the general student body.
Yes, that is very true. And so we are delighted to add football because we really do not, you know, no student that comes to Lawrence Tech, of course, if there is one in 1,000 that end up going, you know, playing professional, we will be happy. But that is not going to happen to the students at Lawrence Tech. They are first students and then athletes. But that will help students that are good students. And, you know, I have kids that now, my own children, are now in late 20s, early 30s. And I remember that they were very active. So today, parents want their kids to be very active. So the athletes are the ones that are also very good students. And so having that opportunity to have good students that also want to play athletics is good for all of us.
And in our final minute, I just wanted to add real quickly, have you add real quickly that we will be in fundraising mode soon for a multi-sport athletic facility, correct?
Yes, yes. So please, yes. We really, what we would like to do is to, we already have a turf field, and so we want to build the stadium around it, and we want it to be the best stadium in the Metro Detroit area.
And we're talking about a very nice 4,000-seat stadium, which is an appropriate size for the university.
Of course.
And it would also be used by the community, right? I understand a couple of high schools are already interested in it.
Yes. So we actually already had this year a couple of high schools, two high schools, one in Southfield and one other high school that and the high school kids came. Mm-hmm. And they are training before classes start at Lawrence Tech. So everything that we do at Lawrence Tech is really community oriented, and so that is one more thing that we want to make sure that our community is involved, the city of Southfield and Metro Detroit area, we are involved in it.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for being with us here today, Dr. Maria Vaz, the provost at Lawrence Technological University.
Thank you very much, Matt.
All right.
Thank you for the ringing.
Oh, sure. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch. Can you hear me? Kathleen?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
I am on.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Maria has agreed to stay if you would like to ask her a question.
You're breaking
or two.
Up now.
Okay.
Should I call back?
No. It's the music. That's all.
Oh, okay.
You're fine. Maria has said she will stay if you want to ask her a question or two to kick off your segment. Is that okay?
Yeah, I don't think I need to, but of course, give her a hug for me.
Okay.
Okay, Kathleen, I just want to say hi. So I did
hi.
Not know. I
hi, Maria. How are you?
Very well. Very
time.
Well. Yeah, I did not know. I was surprised when Matt sent me the email and I saw your name there. So, okay.
You're both breaking up. It's probably the music.
Okay.
I can't hear you very well.
Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye.
All right. You take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch, and we're back with another fun-filled segment of the M-Squared TechCast on this Monday, August 21st. I am flying solo here in the studio. Mr. Mike Brennan, who called in earlier, is enjoying himself in the Netherlands. Our next guest is a longtime friend of the show and a longtime friend of technology and just pretty much a great longtime friend, Kathleen Norton-Schock. And she's here today representing both her very own Diva Tech Talk podcast, as well as the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, and probably a few other things as well. I know, Kathleen, you have more hats than a millinery shop. So,
and yet I never wear a hat, even in the eclipse.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Wasn't that fun today? Did you get a chance to go outside and look at that?
I did not. I was heads down on getting some stuff done. But Dale, my husband Dale, got out of work a lot early, zoomed home and stood on our deck and took a picture.
Yep.
Of course, against my better judgment, there he is. He said, oh, the camera's in the way of the sun. So we'll see how it came out. I'll post it. You and I are friends on a lot of digital sites together, so hopefully you'll see it.
Okay,
I'm
sure
just
will.
Hoping. I kept saying, I hope your eyes were not being, you know, I hope just the phone was aimed at that.
Well, I'll just, I figured I'd just look at it until I needed glasses. Oops. Okay, too late. tell us about the latest doings at Diva Tech Talk, if you would, please.
Okay, well, actually, I'd like to start, if you don't mind, with MCWT.
However you like.
We have so much going on there that I want to make sure we get it all in. So MCWT, for anyone in the audience who doesn't know, is the number one nonprofit in the state of Michigan dedicated to helping women and girls in the technology field. We are celebrating our 15th year this year. And a lot of information about us can be found at www.mcwt.org. The organization started out many years ago, and I'm a volunteer for going on 14 years. So Carrie Paschler is our current president, and I laugh. We say, okay, we're generation 1.5 on this thing. But it started out primarily as a networking association for women who found themselves in the technology field and looked around and realized there weren't a lot of them, and they wanted friends and people to connect to. But within the first 24 months, because it was a woman-run organization and still is very much powered by its volunteers, philanthropy instantly almost entered the picture. And in all probability, in fact, I know that the reason that it entered the picture then was women were looking around 15 years ago here in Michigan, as they were all over the country over 30 years ago, saying, why aren't there more of us in this amazing, exciting, innovative field? And we began to do a bunch of research and realized that a lot of it was because we weren't starting out early enough. So it was so great to hear Dr. Maria Vaz, who has been a longtime supporter of MCWT on your previous segment. She was on our board for a long time, and we still every once in a while get a chance to talk to her at MCWT. But Maria would vouch for the fact that as she is getting students at Lawrence Tech in architecture and engineering and lots of technical fields, she still wasn't getting a lot of women, which was partially why she got very involved with MCWT
right.
way back when,
right,
I remember.
Right. Yeah, Lawrence Tech is close to 30% women now. That's a vast improvement
yes.
over what it used to be, but it's not – I mean, they'd just as soon be 50-50, you know?
Well, and even more, you know, as Jim Hackett, the CEO of Ford, said at our Executive Connection Summit – Who wants to run a company with only 50% of the population? And in, he was referring to the innovation and engineering and IT ranks at Ford. Sure. So MCWT is celebrating its 15th year. And this we have, as always, every quarter is a busy quarter, but the fall tends to be extremely busy. And the first thing I wanted to tell you about is for the second year in a row, we are doing our annual Michigan Woman of the Year in Technology Award, which opened up on August 8th. That is a we're seeking nominations now. This will be our second annual one, and it'll go on forever as long as the organization goes on. And the qualifications are pretty simple. We're looking for a woman in Michigan who embodies our mission, which and our very simple mission is we inspire and grow women in technology. And that woman just has to currently lead or in the past have led significant positive change for women working, teaching, or studying IT, or computer-related careers and fields of study. Last year, it just so happens, our recipient, there were many people who were nominated. Our recipient was Nancy Benevich-Gilby, who is very active at the University of Michigan, particularly in their Entrepreneurship Center. But we are looking for women in all walks of life, and they don't necessarily have to be baby boomers like myself, although having a body of work would not hurt. But they have to be somebody doing something that, again, embodies our mission. So the individual doesn't have to be a member of MCWT to win. The only thing we ask is that that person be available to attend our number one fundraising event of the year, which is our 2017 gala. And in order to be eligible, all you have to do is go to our website at www.mcwt.org. and either fill out an application on behalf of yourself or on behalf of someone else. The deadline date for the applications is September 20th. You can email it to awards@mcwt.org. Pretty simple thing to do. And again, if you'd like to honor someone else that you know who embodies, again, our mission and is doing interesting work or has done interesting work in the past, I would highly, highly recommend to your audience that they do this. It's a way to honor all of these women. And you have from now, which is August 21st, up until September 20th to send the award in. So I mentioned that the only thing you have to do if you win is be available to come to what we call the IT prom. For over 12 years, we've had a black tie event that occurs usually in the early winter or late fall. This year, it will be on October 28th.
That's a little earlier than usual. Yeah.
It is early. It's about a month earlier, and there's a variety of reasons for those, which I'll get into in a minute. But it's going to be October 28th at Ford's Conference Center because Ford is our signature sponsor this year, along with Fujitsu. And it's a Roaring Twenties theme. So come, you don't have to dress as a flapper, particularly you don't, Matt.
Okay.
But bottom line, you know, if you do want to have fun and dress up in some way that's evocative of the 1920s, that would be great.
I'm thinking spats and a straw boater, maybe. How about that?
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. And the reason for it, of course, is that the 1920s in our country was a very, very exciting time for women. I mean, this was voting rights were in full bloom. Flappers were having their way with the world. Driving in Stutz Bearcats, drinking, swearing, and most importantly, doing significant things and declaring their independence. So, and if you would like, I would definitely recommend that anybody who would like to be involved in this, think about sponsoring. The fact is, our signature event, you can buy an individual ticket, but those don't open until September 15th. But if you would like to be a sponsor, the sponsorships go down as low as $3,000 for a half a table and all the way up to $25,000. But there's a wide range in between, all very creatively named, like the Bootlegger, that would be our cocktail sponsor. And then the Model T, that is the parking valet sponsor. And then, of course, we have a Charleston sponsorship. And it's going to be a really fun evening. You can sponsor the photo booth. You can sponsor something called Morse code, which is a little card everybody gets given with their Wi-Fi sign in as they walk in. And this year, as opposed to in previous years, We will be doing a casino gaming as part of the event, which will, of course, also raise a little bit of additional money. And we're aiming at a lot of money because, as you know, Matt, over the last 10 years, for instance, we've given away $1 million worth of scholarships to graduate and undergraduates. We do 7 IT camps a year for 5th through 8th grade girls. We do after school programs for high school girls. We are doing, and I'll talk about this in a second, our annual website contest and opening it up, not just to high school, but also middle school girls this year. We do a lot of things to encourage girls of all ages up to and through middle-aged and post-middle-aged women. We have some significant programs this year for women who may be coming back into the field or would like to stay involved in the field. So, for instance, we are going to be having our annual membership meeting on October 5th. And while that is primarily for existing members, if you know someone who's a member and you are not yet a member and you want to mark that on your calendar, a member can bring you as a guest. And you'd have one of the most exciting networking events that you could possibly imagine coming up to Gala, but a little more casual, right?
Right.
And that'll be in Ann Arbor. And our speaker will be Vijay Sankaran, who is the CIO for TD Ameritrade. And then on top of that, again, for women in their middle career or early careers, we have every year for the last 7 years, we have something called Ignite. This year, we renamed it 3 years ago, but we've had a mentoring program for 7 years. Now it's called Ignite Mentoring. You can be a mentoree or a mentor. And again, you can find information about that on our website at www.mcwt.org. That is free for any MCWT mentor, a member. And the fact is, I was just starting to say that I have heard from many people who have been mentors, and I was one myself in the past, that a mentor often learns just as much as the mentoree when they engage in this process. It's a 6 to 7 month long mentoring program. There are some structure and there's rules and structure and a lot of content involved, but it also is structured so that you can work it around your school or your work. So that's the fourth thing I wanted to talk about in terms of MCWT. And I just have a couple of more on that. Coming up very quickly on September 1st, we will be announcing our website contest. We've been running this every year for about 9 years now. It used to be just for high school contestants, and now we're opening it up to middle schools. Last year, we had 170 teams compete for a variety of prizes. I imagine that now we're opening it up to middle school, there'll be even more contestants. So if you have a daughter or a niece or a granddaughter, or you yourself are a high school or a middle school student, and you are involved in website or you'd like to be in website development, I'd strongly suggest monitoring our website on or around September 1st for more details on that contest, which opens, again, on September 1st with the judging occurring sometime in November. So there's a whole process there, too. And then finally, MCWT, because we have a wonderful executive director, Kim Cross, who took that job on in January, having worked for us on staff the year before. We have now won over 6 grants from very large sponsors in a record period of time, less than 120 days. And we'll be rolling up to Giving Tuesday, which, again, if you know much about the nonprofit philanthropy world, Giving Tuesday occurs every year in the United States on November 28th. And stay tuned because MCWT will do a little campaign because for those people who can't come, you know, for instance, can't come on the 28th and give money that way or can't necessarily participate in some other things, but do want to give just a little bit of money to support the wonderful things we're doing for girls and women. That's the day to mark on your calendar to do it. November 28th, Giving Tuesday, again, very well known in the nonprofit world. So that's it on MCWT.
Kathleen, we have 1 minute left. I hate to tell you.
Okay. Right. Well, then I will just say for everyone else, I am the co-founder of something called Diva Tech Talk. We do podcasts with women and girls in tech, but primarily women to inspire girls in tech. And you can go to www.divatechtalk.com. We will be releasing podcast number 52 tomorrow. Tomorrow it will be with Meredith Harper, who is the Chief Privacy and Security Officer for Henry Ford Health Systems. Last week's was with Kirsten Edmondson-Wolf, who actually actually got into tech because she was watching the overthrow of the Jakarta government back in the 1990s, believe it or not. So that's a pretty interesting story. But we will be continuing to do that, and that is www.divatechtalk.com.
All right. Thanks very much, Kathleen Norton-Schock of DivaTechTalk.com and the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. Thanks once again for a terrific informative segment. For right now, this is Matt Rausch, and you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. Hey, we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. It's Matt Rausch. Mike Brennan is away in the Netherlands this week, but he'll be back on our next show, which is Monday, September 11th. That's when we're coming back. Right now, I want to introduce Catherine Phillips, who is allegedly retired, I think, librarian at Lawrence Technological University, but you're doing so many things that it's impossible to think of you as retired. And you have a couple of guests here today, and you want to talk about the Inventors Association. So take it away. There we go. We're on.
Thanks for having us, Matt, here. We're really pleased post-eclipse that we were all able to get over here.
Yep.
And I have what it is the Inventors Association of Metropolitan Detroit, also known as IAMD. We've been in existence for quite a few years, but since 2011 at Lawrence Tech. Lawrence Tech hosts monthly meetings, third Thursday of the month in the evening. And today I have a couple of my board members here with me, and we're going to discuss a little bit about what we think is so great about the group.
Okay.
So I have Mary Cordoban. She's the manager of the Business, Science, and Technology Department at Detroit Public Library Main Branch.
Oh, nice.
She's also a trained patent and trademark resource librarian. That means she goes to Alexandria yearly. Mm-hmm. And she is trained and learns about the latest in intellectual property. So she's a wonderful resource to have on our board and for our members. And secondly, we have Maria McKendrick. She is a board member, and she's the upcoming president-elect. She's taking over from me. So, see, I am retiring. And she is the founder of Artcraft Management. She's also an entrepreneur herself with years of experience, and she's going to tell us a little bit about some of the things that that the group does as well. We have wonderful feedback from clients of Maria's, and we'll talk a little bit about some of the resources that we bring to our members. So. Mary, can you tell us a little bit about the Inventors Association, just what our mission is, and what we do, just quickly what we are and what we do.
Well, we're a nonprofit organization. I like to think of it as a peer group of inventors meeting with inventors, but it's just so much more than that. I always, in my job of working at the library, I get people who are just starting, and a lot of the times they say, I have an idea, what do I do next? And I love helping them, but one thing I've noticed is that they're so alone, and it helps to network with people. So it isn't just meeting another inventor. We all have other people that are members, like attorneys or people who are good with marketing or various things like that. And we have a lot of networking time during our meetings. That's, for some people, that's their favorite part of it. We also have speakers every month, almost every month, and who talk on invention topics. So actually, I'm not an inventor myself, but I've really enjoyed being a member and being on the board of the Inventors Association.
All right, so tell me, when does the Inventors Association meet? I would imagine the same night, once a month, that kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, the third Thursday of every month.
Okay, and what time?
Well, we gather at 6:30, so between 6:30 and 7 is networking time. And
sure.
Then usually between 7 and 8 is our speaker. Then we have another hour or so of networking.
And what's the location on the Lawrence Tech campus for that?
Well, the room varies.
It has varied. This year it's going to be in T210
okay.
again, which is in the UTLC building. We have a wonderful email list. I say wonderful. we've got good feedback on it. And if you go to our website at inventoriamd.org, you can receive all the latest and greatest information about our programming as well as other free area programming. And information about the time, who the speaker is, and so forth. I also wanted to ask Maria to mention a little bit. We co-sponsor a conference every fall in September called the Expo, and this would be Expo 17. And she has attended for the last several years. Maria, would you tell us, you know, what you enjoyed about going to the Expo or what the Expo is? It's September 15th to 17th this year.
Yes, that's correct. And thank you, Kathy and Mary. The 2017 Michigan Expo, the Inventors Expo, up at the Kellogg Center in Michigan State, is going to be held this year on a Friday and a Saturday. It's the first time it's going to be two nights with an overnight and an off itinerary meetup type thing of the inventors that gather there. Last year we had such a great showing from inventors groups all across the state of Michigan. They converged from the UP, Grand Rapids, and Southeast Michigan to come together, network, get amazing speakers that were pulled together from the MSU University Outreach Engagement, and it really is the catalyst, an annual event for inventors in the state. New inventors wanting to put up a table and demonstrate their new invention and products also are given time to pitch.
Yes, that's right. That's what I hear. Mary, would you also tell our listeners what kind of resources the general public or entrepreneurs can get at the Detroit Public Library in the science technology department?
Well, when you come on in, we try to assess where you are with your invention, but we don't want you to tell us what your invention is. So we can help you with all types of general questions about patents, trademarks, and other types of intellectual property. But we can also teach you how to do a patent search and how to put in your application. And we can recommend books and databases also. But it does get to a point where we might have to refer you out because we're not attorneys.
Great. Thanks, Mary. I also want to put in a plug for Lawrence Tech for the library.
That's our shameless plug bell. So
anyway, we also have a lot of intellectual property resources, patent resources, business startup resources at the Lawrence Tech Library, and we do help people from time to time as well, both our students, faculty, and community, with patent searching, looking at specialty databases. A lot of our databases will have patent research capabilities, so you can look and find out what other types of products that are similar to yours but different enough. Why are you getting the patent? You know, and this sort of pre-research that you might do after you have a provisional patent. Also, I wanted to mention that our inventors group has sponsored several kind of field trip type things. Maria, would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, we wanted to break it up and allow for meetings that were in different parts of the Detroit area because we service Southeast Michigan. And a shameless plug is to tell you we are considered the premier inventors association in Michigan. One, because of our location and geography serving the Metro Detroit area, but also because we've been doing this enough and our board members have accumulated so much tribal knowledge. We manage intangibles, and we're able, when somebody approaches us, to very quickly assess where they are at, what they need, and where they need to go. So with that in mind, and knowing we have such a diverse group of innovators that might not need patent information, but in general IP assessment, I tried to break it up, and membership in July involved a trip to see Mary at the Detroit Public Library. So we parked at Tech Town, got a brief introduction to Tech Town, rode the Q line, got off at the Detroit Public Library stop, and then learned a lot about how search is done on the global patent databases, which Mary is our resident expert. So all this comes with modest membership and the ability for us to very quickly service our members. So we want to continue on that vein. We want to definitely keep and always maintain the relationship with Lawrence Tech. But we're thinking once every 3 months, we might go to Tech Town. We might, you know, if U of M Dearborn is listening, might invite us. And Wayne State as well with the Tech Town continue and grow our relationship in Southeast Michigan.
Thanks, Mary.
If I could just say one more thing.
Sure.
Just as far as the library services are concerned, you don't have to be a member or a Detroit resident. Anybody can come.
And the other thing I wanted to point out is that, in retiring from the board soon, I'm really proud of the board members and the way that they give back to their mentoring new entrepreneurs. So they may be successful and kind of looking back on their career, and they not only speak to our group and speak at other area functions, they also are involved with K-12 STEM programs, and they also act as guest lecturers at Lawrence Tech entrepreneurial engineering classes. So we're really proud of the group, and we want to continue the strong relationship we have with Lawrence Tech. Matt, did you have any other questions for us?
Well, just give that website one more time. We're down to about a minute left here.
Okay, so it's Inventor, InventorIAMD.org.
Okay.
So InventorIAMD.org.
And the next meeting would be?
Our next meeting is September 21st.
Okay.
In the evening. We have a couple of interesting speakers planned. We're still kind of getting things finalized. But what we often do is have a successful inventor during part of the meeting and then a more educational spot during the other part of the meeting.
Okay.
So it's well received.
And it'll be in the Lawrence Tech University Technology and Learning Center, or UTLC. If you go to ltu.edu/map, you can find it. Also, it's just the big silver building off of the 10-mile parking lot at Lawrence
Tech.
It's kind of hard to miss. All right. I want to thank all of our guests on the show here today, Catherine Phillips and others from the Inventors Association of Detroit, Lawrence Tech Provost Maria Vaz, Kathleen Norton-Schock from the Michigan Council of Women in Technology, and my co-host Mike Brennan phoning in from his vacation in the Netherlands with some really interesting stuff about climate change and sea level rise and how they're handling it in one of the lowest civilized places on Earth, the Netherlands, much of which is actually below sea level. We'll be back September 11th as our next show. But until then, this is Matt Rausch signing off for the M-Squared TechCast, and we're proudly part of the PodcastDetroit.com family.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.